constant turmoil. Egalitarianism isn't the answer. One's class, one station in life, is a statement of one's position in society. You have a claim, an equal claim, to all the rights that appertain to that position in society. Southern slavery is moral cannibalism. It is a benign exploitative relationship. The institution works to check the evil in man. It helps check the evil of the owner, for he must preserve his property. He takes care of his slaves much as one takes care of a tractor or any other implement that is necessary for the creation of wealth. You oil a tractor not because you love it, but because it creates wealth for you. You have an investment in it. Now, this means that it will cost you something to maintain that tractor, and you will spend out part of your profit in getting it. But in maintaining that tractor, you enable yourself to have a very comfortable existence. And that, of course, is the point of life, to be comfortable. It also helps to check the slave, slavery. Because slaves are evil as well. Although inferior to whites, they are humans, and they have the same destructive impulses, as do all humans. The slave has to work to be maintained. It's a quid pro quo. You must work for your keep. You must behave socially and acceptably to continue to get the goods that make you able to survive and give you comfort. Fitzhugh writes, "Free society asserts the right of a few to the earth. Slavery maintains that it belongs in different degrees to all." Northern society is based on something like natural cannibalism, unleavened human oppression, people just in a laissez-faire environment imposing themselves on others, exploiting them without any concomitant responsibility to alleviate their material condition. Now, note the parallel here to Winthrop's notions of natural and moral liberty. Moral liberty is constructed. For Fitzhugh, so too, moral cannibalism is constructed. It is a function of society. For the interest of northern capitalists, those who own the means of production, as well as for northern workers, it would be wise, Fitzhugh argues, for the North to adopt this kind of social order. Now, governments, as we've said, from Fitzhugh's perspective, originate in and are maintained by force. Again, note the difference from liberalism. Popular government, Fitzhugh tells you, is fine so long as conservatism is the interest of the governing class. Government must reinforce the hierarchy. The danger of mass rule, democracy, is that it will end up in the masses ruling for their immediate interests. This undermines order, leads to revolution, threatens stability. Revolutions, he says, always go backwards. They are forces of destruction. Order must be maintained by the state and the society, as it is in the family. With this kind of order, produced not by consent but by force, authority will lie in the natural leader, the master race, as he puts it, which has exclusive rights and privileges of citizenship, and shouldn't extend that citizenship to those who are not ready to embrace it. The social interests of masters and slaves are identical, maintaining the social whole. Fitzhugh's radicalism was not in the cause he defended. There were many defenders of slavery, but in the philosophical basis of his defense. He is an outsider, chiding those on the inside. As with Brownson, he rejected liberalism in favor of an organic conservatism. He solved the problem slavery posed to liberalism by rejecting liberalism. Now, not all defenders of slavery took this tact. Some tried to bend the system in liberalism to their immediate and, they perceived, enduring needs. We will see this in the next lecture.